Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now is New York Times bestselling author John Kenny. His new book, Love Poems for People with Children, covers it all from newborns to teens, back to school shopping and summer vacations, and a parent's job is never really done. John Kenny, thanks so much for being on In the Moment. Welcome back.
Kara, thank you so much for having me.
Really, all I did was just open the page, and then I just kept opening the page, and every poem just really made me laugh. So, let's talk a little bit about give me kind of the motivation for writing these poems.
A fear and profit, I think. that's actually ridiculous because there's not a lot of big money in poetry. Let me just say that. This was the follow-up to the first collection, which came out earlier this year, as you mentioned, Love Poems for Married People. And that was based on a New Yorker piece I had done several years ago. But it was only, six or eight poems, and someone at my publisher suggested we turn it into a book. I thought they were kidding. And I think I had been drinking at the time, and they were like, no, we're serious. So we did the first book, and it seemed to be liked by folks, and so we did this one as well. It was my editor's idea for this because there were several poems that hadn't made the first book, and she said, there's kind of a theme around the ones that we didn't use, and it seems to be about kids. Let's try to do one on sort of the wide world of having children. So that's what we did.
And you have how many children?
I have two, but it seems like it's four, depending on the day. For example, I just had them the entire weekend because their mom had to go to Philadelphia, and they're a blast. I mean, I started a little late. I have an almost 11-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old son. But, for some reason, my son, you cannot wake him Monday through Friday. You can't get him out of bed. And Sunday morning, he wakes up at 6:30, wide awake. Dad, let's go.
Yeah.
Can you get up? I'm like, what are you talking about? Why are you awake? It's time to get up, Dad. I'm like, no, it's not.
That's your day off. Yeah.
Yeah, go watch SpongeBob.
What is your process? I mean, how do these poems come to you as a writer?
And I want to give due credit to real poets out there. I mean, this book is like poetry in much the same way. Arby's is like farm to table dining. I have enormous respect for real poets and the difficult job they do. The process. I have a small group of friends, parent friends, who I send an email out to and say, for the love of God, help me. Give me stories of your challenging marriage or your difficult children, and I will try to have some fun with those. For me, having written lots of different kinds of things, a couple of novels, scripts, things like that, this is absolutely the hardest kind of writing I've ever done because you really, really have to choose carefully. These live and die kind of on the title. If the titles are charming / funny / grin inducing, then you've got something. I can't give enough credit, by the way, to my wife, who she's the first one to see these, and she's a tough person to make laugh, but she's also a wonderful editor. And today is actually our wedding anniversary. So,
well, happy anniversary!
Thank you.
Why don't you read one for us? How about my 6-year-old got a hold of my phone?
I'd be happy to. My 6-year-old got hold of my phone. My apologies, Reverend. My 6-year-old got hold of my phone and sent you 142 poop emojis. Please know that this in no way reflects my opinion of you or the church, although it does make me wonder if there is a God. To my father-in-law, Lou, no grandparent should ever receive a GIF of Fabio not wearing pants, dancing suggestively with the words, "Let's get it on," I was sure I had deleted that. And to my boss, Gary, did you happen to receive a photo of a baboon's rump with a note reading, found this picture of you? I sent that one.
This is something we can all relate to, I think.
Yeah, it's every time
not so
I
much the boss
phone,
part, but
true. Every time I pick up my phone, my daughter has redone the settings. There's a new photo. There's a new. It's. She can work it better than I can.
Yeah, I remember 911 telling me I need to figure out how to lock my phone better because after three calls from my 3-year-old, calling 911,
My daughter, when she was 6, ordered, I think it was $173 worth of stuff from Amazon. She put everything in the cart and clicked, one-click buying. And to our horror, I must say, Amazon was very kind about it. And they said, yeah, this happens all the time.
Oh, that's funny. So having children young, you talk a little bit about teenage years and all of that too. So those stories came from your friends?
Yeah. It's funny because when I got out of college, all I really wanted to do was sort of travel around the world and did that for a while and came back and cleverly had no money and no prospects of a job. And so I have 5 brothers, and one of them had just had a baby. And so I kind of filled in as his nanny for about a year. And I have 9 nieces and nephews, and so there's a huge age range. So I've gotten to sort of live vicariously through those. And while my kids are still pretty young, as I said, my daughter's almost 11 and my son's 7. I've seen that sort of journey from, exorcist-like spitting up babies to, millennials moving back in with you after they get their PhD. So it was kind of fun to try my hand at that at the swath of it all.
Would you like to read another one?
I would be happy to. This is called labor pain. After the epidural, you managed to nap in the delivery room, and I watched you, my lovely wife, smiling at the thought of our child, but also a little hungry. Did you pack a sandwich or anything? I whispered to you, shaking your arm a bit when you didn't respond. So what I did was, because I didn't want to bother you anymore, I went across the street to grab a quick burger and a beer. I decided to sit at the bar because I was kind of tired too. Maybe I was just hungry, but it was a really good burger. So then I had a second beer and got to chatting with the bartender. He was the one who suggested that maybe I should get back to the hospital when he found out what was going on. Great guy. And while I wasn't technically in the room with you when our son was born, I was certainly there in spirit. We should all go back to that bar sometime.
Did this really happen?
My lawyers have advised me not to answer that question. No, it did not. I was present for the birth of both of my children.
Oh, but that's really where you wanted to be, right? Oh, that's funny.
At a bar with a burger?
At a bar with a burger?
Again, I should not, on my anniversary, answer that question, honestly.
Well, I will tell you, I remember when the doctor came in with one of my deliveries and sent my husband for breakfast to just get him out of the... He's like, you leave and go get food and come back in an hour.
You're not helping here. Go paint a room or something.
So I really do believe that this is happens.
Yeah, those kinds of things. That's based on a true story. I exaggerated a bit, but that is based on a true story from a friend of mine who shook his wife's arm while she was in labor and said, did you pack a sandwich? As only men can do.
Because that's what was on her mind was feeding him, right?
Right. No, of course. Of course. Yeah, it's... I mean, during the birth of our first child, my wife decided that, you know, she should give birth without drugs and just mm-hmm. do it all naturally. And so my role was to massage her lower back. And so I did that. And I remember saying it was a challenging and long labor. And my wife is a rock star and very strong. And I remember making the epic mistake after the birth of the child and things were calm. And I was rubbing my hands, and my wife said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "My hands are killing me. I mean, that massage was really hard." And women get a certain look uh-huh. on their face uh-huh. when you have made a terrible mistake. And my wife got that look, and I sort of tried to reel it back in, but it was too late. Yeah, so.
I want to let you read the last poem in the book for Lulu and Hugh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean... You know, my preface to that is simply that, you know, parenthood is this, it's a dialectic, right? It's two opposing views at exactly the same time, often in the same moment, right? It's incredibly difficult and challenging and sleep deprived. And it's just, you never get to do what you want when you want. And yet it's the most rewarding, amazing thing, right? No professional achievement, no, I ran the marathon, no anything has for me come close to that sort of those ineffable feelings of being a parent. So I think it's essential that we make fun of these things in life. I think it was Gandhi who said, if I had no sense of humor, I would have long ago killed myself. So I think that's really important, but I also think we have to recognize, you know, what a exceptional journey it is. In the first book, the only sort of semi-serious poem was the last one, to my wife, which I wrote right before the book went to press. And I thought maybe I should do the same thing for my kids with this one. So this is called For Lulu and Hewitt.
And John Kenny, I am sorry to say this, but we are out of time, and we're going to leave that a mystery for people to buy your book. How's that?
What a good lead-in for the mystery.
All right, John
Kenny. Sorry for going on so long, but thank you.
Thank you so much for taking time and coming on the program.